time to go behind enemy lines. We get you ready for the Warriors and the Trailblazers in the Western Conference Finals. 95.7 The Game's Warriors reporter John Dickinson teams up with 1080 The Fan's Brandon Sprague to bring you Behind Enemy Lines.
From the hash mark, he got it! Curry!
And we welcome you into our Behind Enemy Lines podcast. John Dickinson, 95.7 The Game in San Francisco, joined once again by Brandon Sprague, 1080 The Fan in Portland, host of Dirt and Sprague, noon to 3 up on 1080 The Fan in Portland. And Brandon, more of the same in Game 3, unfortunately for the Blazers. They build a big lead, but then a third quarter explosion for the Warriors, implosion for Portland, and here we are with a 3-0 series now in favor of the Warriors, and the Blazers probably think it should be 2-1 the other way.
Yeah, it's been really tough, man, to have leads of 17 and 18 and to blow both those games down. It's just backbreaking. We'll see what happens tonight, but I'm kind of in the majority opinion that this is probably it. The Dame Lillard rib news came out. Clearly, he's been bothered by that, and that explains some of the problems he's been having offensively in the series, aside from getting blitzed defensively. But this kind of feels like a sweep tonight.
Yeah, and Brandon, we were talking about it coming into Game 3, just the differences between these two teams. And while Curry and Klay Thompson have won the guard matchups in this series, it really has boiled down to Draymond Green being the difference maker. I thought Saturday night was one of the best games I've ever seen Draymond Green play in terms of just tempo and controlling the game and being a point forward and just being relentless on both ends. Even if the guards are going to play even, we've talked about this a lot here these last few days and this week, even if the guards are going to cancel each other out, where the Warriors have a major advantage is the next guy up, and the next guy up in this series may be the MVP of the series, and that's been Draymond Green.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, I don't know how you watch this series this far and don't come away with the conclusion that Draymond Green's the best player in the series for both teams by a mile. I mean, as great as Steph and as great as Klay have been in spurts, I just think everything you mentioned, Draymond pushing the tempo on made shots and putting Portland in bad transitional defensive positions, Draymond never really allowing himself to get rattled by questionable calls or moments in games where he feels like he's slighted like he has in the past. The more composed Draymond Green is easily the best Draymond Green we've seen in this entire run, his entire career. If he does this, he is a difference maker to the point where I think a lot of pundits that might think Milwaukee or if it's Toronto can push Golden State, I think that's where it kind of leads you going, not so sure about that one, especially with KD coming back. This Draymond Green is plugged in on a level that I've never seen, and I'm with you. I thought that was his best game. He's had some really good moments during this stretch, but to watch what he did, I mean, he had a triple-double at almost halftime. It was amazing what he was able to do and how he controlled it. And this is what we talked about after Game 1 was they have a Draymond Green, right? Klay and Steph can have okay games, and they can still win. The thing with Portland, not having that guy, it makes all the world a difference where Dame gets shut down a little bit. DJ really not as efficient with his scoring. And then what do you have? Rodney Hood, Evan Turner? I mean, they just don't have that Draymond Green, and he's been the difference so far.
Brandon Sprague, 1080 The Fan in Portland, joining me, John Dickinson, 95.7 The Game in San Francisco, Behind Enemy Lines podcast, and for the Western Conference Finals, this matchup with Game 4 coming up between the Warriors and the Blazers. I thought Terry Stotts made a nice move with his lineup change, moving Myers Leonard into the starting lineup, and Myers Leonard did score 16 points. It also set up Enes Kanter to play against the Warriors' second unit, got him away from Stephen Curry and the pick and rolls a little bit and up against some of the Warriors' subs. I thought he had a positive impact on the game there as well. But then when you look up at the end of the night, it's the Warriors' bench, efficient and scoring and contributing, and the Warriors wind up getting that win. And again, they win the battle of the benches, which is something that I thought Portland probably believed they would have a pretty distinct advantage coming into this series.
Yeah, when I got to the arena on Saturday, I was talking with a couple of beat guys, and I had somebody specifically tell me, hey, I just got some key information, lineup change is coming, and it's going to surprise people. And I instantly thought back because I did a hit on your guys' Warrior show on Saturday morning, and I remember telling you guys, like, on his tombstone, Terry Stotts never changes the lineup, and here we go, about 7 hours later, Terry Stotts is changing everything. I thought it was a brilliant move. In the moment, you're kind of like, okay, we'll see how this one pans out. Clearly it worked. The spacing was great. They got Damian Jones in foul trouble early. Myers playing a lot of confidence and allowing the pick and rolls to mean a little more and getting those open shots. It's just unfortunate because the Warriors are so good that if you don't have more than a 13-point halftime lead, you're in trouble. Draymond said this in the post game: 13 points to us is a minute 50 stretch. I mean, they could do that in 2 minutes. And it, quite honestly, man, I think even the most diehard of Blazer fan would have to tell you, going into the half, you felt good. They played good basketball. It was nice to see. But 13 points, it should have been 23 points the way they outplayed Golden State. And I think that speaks to the greatness that has been Golden State in this run. So it was a good lineup change. The unfortunate part is it's not something that can be sustainable, and that sucks. I mean, maybe against any other team, the lineup change works, and in the second half they kind of just put it away. But when you play Golden State, man, you have to bring your best A-plus basketball from start to finish. And we saw the difference in the second half between championship pedigree and team trying to get to championship pedigree.
Yeah, no doubt, Brandon. And I was going back and forth with our guys in the studio during the game, the guys I do the post-game show with, and it was, boy, Portland should be up more. Portland should be up more. And we've seen games like this in the past get away from the Warriors and turn into blowouts. But the Warriors just have had this knack of hanging around. They did it in the Houston series even without Durant. Hang around, and then they go on this massive run holding the Blazers to 13 in the third quarter, and then again winning that early part of the fourth quarter with the bench to extend the lead and then get the victory 110-99 in game three of that series. Brandon, I want to get into Damian Lillard. I think everybody watching this thing knew that something was wrong. The rib injury comes out after the game. I know that's not something that he wants to use as an excuse, and obviously he's going to keep playing through it even tonight in game four. But the bigger picture I want to get into with Dame is, and this Blazers team, just, you know, the motivation to continue. I know he wants to play at least one more game maybe in Oakland, obviously being from there. The Blazers have had an incredible year. I think this is going to probably go down as a positive year for them no matter what happens tonight or in game five. But do the Blazers, in your mind, have enough left in the tank right now to even keep fighting to try and get it to Wednesday night in a game five?
I mean, that's a tough thing to answer, John. I mean, you know, what do they have to play for? I would just quite simply say pride and respect for themselves, something that they have been showing this entire playoff stretch. Now, does Dame have anything in the tank to be able to get them over the top and win a game? I'm led to believe no. What has led us to believe that he has what it takes physically and then even a little mentally, because he's being blitzed on those traps and it's making life difficult for him to win one? I hope to be proven wrong. This is going to sound really corny and such a Blazer thing to say, but I want a gentleman's sweep. I think sending these fans off tonight is like a big thank you for kind of what this season has been with a win would be awesome. Even if they get stomped in Oakland for game five, I still think it would be great for them to cap off what has been, as you mentioned, just exceeding expectation this season of getting to the West Finals, especially without Jusuf Nurkić. So, you know, it's really tough for me to pinpoint if I think they can do it. They showed in the first half of game three they have the capabilities to play good basketball. It's just going to be, is everybody mentally ready for vacation? It's that old TNT 1-2-3 Cancun. How many guys have booked their vacations already because they know it's an insurmountable lead now against the Warriors? And John, I don't know about you, but I don't get to hear a lot of post-game Warrior stuff. I mean, obviously the ones that go national will get those clips, but I thought it was real eye-opening of who they really are. Listening to Clay, and Clay didn't have many questions asked for him in the post-game, but he had one where basically he said, you know, we still have 48 minutes of basketball. We have a trip to the finals on the line. And he had this, like, deranged, mad look of, like, quite honestly, I'm excited about it. And it would just look like a killer up there on the podium talking about trying to finish this series. So I think Portland can win a game. It's just Golden State seems to want it a little more.
Yeah, Clay has a maniacal little half smile that he'll go to at the end of an answer that is just it's absolutely incredible. I mean, he really is. And I'm not sure everybody recognizes it nationally, but he really, and he doesn't love talking to the media at all. He certainly doesn't love going up to the big press conference room and the podium. It's more comfortable when he gets to do it with somebody else, although that tends to keep him up there a little bit longer than the 2 or 3 minutes that he would like. But yeah, he has almost a maniacal little smile as he's noodling through his answers and giving his answers out. Truly a national treasure that we're not sure in the Bay Area is totally appreciated on that grand scale. He's something else.
Yeah, I love watching him play. Obviously, the local angle here. I know a couple people that actually, their families are really close with the Thompsons, and I've heard actually nothing but great things about who he is as a person. It's just he cracks me up. His entire podium presence, I was sitting there laughing because, one, it didn't seem like anybody really had any questions for him because it was the Draymond Green game. He had an amazing performance. So he would just make these facial expressions or,
yes,
you know, he'd pipe in with a preach, and he really wouldn't elaborate much. And I love the approach that dude brings. I haven't agreed with everything he has said over the years to the media, the LeBron James NBA Finals thing of basically quit bitching, and then that backfired on him, but for the most part, I love the way the dude handles himself, and I love how he fits with that team. He's really entertaining to watch.
Yeah, and for those of you up there in Portland at 1080 The Fan, and in Portland, if you want to check out, we actually had we posted a video on our Twitter at 957 The Game of just Draymond answering questions and all of Clay's facial expression. So yeah, we were all over that. Honestly, I mean, yeah, it was hilarious, and he does just kind of, at one point, Draymond, he says, "Hey, if it's it's a better shot if I can get it to Clay," and Clay just kind of looked like, "Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is."
Oh, that quote, John. That quote was cracking me and my coworker up because I think the quote was, "If I have a wide open shot and Clay has a half-open shot,
yes,
I still think Clay's shot is the better shot." And Clay, like, nods and, like, "Yep, Draymond's right." I was dying with that reaction.
Yeah, yeah. He is absolutely hilarious. Brandon, we were talking about the motivation for the Blazers and fighting for that gentleman's sweep, let's say, to get it back to Oakland for a game five, and that versus the Warriors' motivation. If there's been one thing this season, and it's different in the postseason, but the Warriors at times have been a little lax when they can be, and tonight is really the first time in this series, and I think the first time since, let's say, game five of the Clippers series in the first round, where the Warriors are in that position of everybody thinks they're going to win, everybody thinks it's over, and at points in the regular season, they've just laid eggs in games like that. Now, I know 48 minutes to the finals, and Klay Thompson mentioned that, but if there's one thing we're kind of keeping an eye on up here is, do the Warriors have that just give-up game almost in them? I mean, they had the Clippers in game five in Oakland, and couldn't finish them off. They lost to Phoenix at home, with all five of the All-Star players in the starting lineup and playing in March. They've just had these odd losses, more home than away, throughout the course of the season. They play more buttoned up on the road and have all year. But I think it is interesting because they are banged up, and I doubt Andre Iguodala is going to play tonight in game four, although questionable. They are banged up and want to get that rest, but they've also, focus has been an issue at times once they gain full control of their own destiny.
Yeah, and I think the thing on Golden State is I wonder on that too, leaving game four or game three, was are they going to be lax knowing they're going back home and they can kind of have a party at Oracle to celebrate another finals appearance? Steve Kerr has been dropping little hints here and there about focus. He had mentioned that, I think, after games one or game two, about he told his team that this was the chip on the shoulder team that has nothing to lose. They're here, and it's been an amazing ride, and they want to win and cap this season off. And he thought his guys didn't come out with focus. And I thought you saw that kind of theme with them in the post game of game three, where, Steve had talked about that of being focused yet again for another game. This isn't over. Draymond said, Dame's got the kind of player that can change a series with a shot. Clay, we just talked about that, how excited he is for game four. And Stephen kind of mentioned that too in his post game about just having another opportunity to get to the finals. I hope to be wrong on this one. And I really hope that they can come out tonight and get one win for the city. But I remember watching their game four last year against the Pelicans, and that team completely rolled over. I think Dame had mentally fatigued. He had gotten doubled in that series and had a much worse performance last year. And I think it kind of broke him in a way because he couldn't quite figure out the puzzle of what their defense was presenting to their offense. CJ scored some points, but he didn't do it really till garbage time. And that score is not indicative of how far apart those two teams were in that game four. So I'm wondering if we see a similar performance tonight. Does Portland come out, give their best shot, Golden State sustains, and then Golden State runs away? Honestly, John, I would lean more towards not going to be shocked if I see that before a Blazer win, because there is something to a team being down 3-0, knowing that their best player can't get it going, and he is hurt as well, and Golden State is still Golden State. I don't think they intimidate teams anymore, but what I think they do is they make it feel so impossible to beat them. Like, teams step on the court, I think, in 15, 16, and they're like, oh, my God, these guys are winning 70 games. They can't miss from three. But now, because the league has shifted to basically mimicking them, I don't think teams are afraid of them anymore. I just think when you get in this position, it's like, well, can't beat this much talent. This season's done. No team's ever come back from 3-0. I hope to be proven wrong, but I have a real concern that Golden State kind of comes out tonight and ends up just running away with it. Dame exits with, like, 4 minutes to go. Standing ovation. Thanks for a great season.
Brandon, final topic here I wanted to touch on with you, in case this is the final Behind Enemy Lines podcast, if the series does end tonight, it's just kind of what's next for the Blazers. I mean, we look out here in the Bay Area at challengers to the Warriors, and the Rockets have been the biggest challenger in the Western Conference, and everybody always keeps an eye on Oklahoma City and what will they do with Westbrook and Paul George, and the Blazers have been a team that has faced the Warriors in the playoffs a couple of different times. What's kind of next for the Blazers as far as making that jump to the next level? Because it's, you know, we talk about, you know, they've got the guards, they've kept that group together. How do you find that next playmaker? How do you find your Draymond Green, if you will, or your Andre Iguodala, if you will, if you're the Blazers?
You know, if you talk to certain media members and certain fans, they would tell you they think Yusuf Nurkic is their Draymond Green. He's a good passing big man. He's only, I think he's, what, is he 25, 26 years old, 24 maybe? He's still super young. My concern with him is that he's a 7-foot, 300-pound dude who's coming off of a bone going through his skin. That's never going to be the same to me. And I hope that we can get Yusuf Nurkic back to what he was. But I'm also kind of thinking in my mind, we may never see that Yusuf Nurkic again. Those injuries are horrific. You saw with Gordon Hayward this year, he basically took an entire season. We'll see if he can come back. And then Paul George, I thought last year Paul George, he struggled because it took his body a full year of playing basketball on a regular basis to be back to what it was. So you may not have Yusuf Nurkic much at all next year. And I think that's going to be the million-dollar question for us probably on tomorrow's show. If the Warriors end up sweeping tonight, is what does the summer entail? Because this is going to be the third time now Damian Lillard has been kicked out of the playoffs by the Golden State Warriors. He has suffered more from Golden State than even James Harden and the Houston Rockets here. This has been really tough for them to get over, as it has for everybody in the league. And they don't have much to play with. They have about a $5.7 million mid-level, and that's it. They are maxed out in their salary cap. Paul Allen, who obviously has passed now, he didn't want to spend luxury tax anymore. He did that in the late 90s, early 2000s, and it got him a great team, and then it got him the Jailblazers. So he really learned from that lesson. I don't know what they do, but I would imagine Damian Lillard's going to be in Neil O'Shea's year of like, hey, let's not settle here. Because if they come back with this same group minus Nurkic, I don't know how you get back to this point. You had some things kind of break your way this year with Houston being with where they were. I don't think this Blazer team would have beaten Houston in the series. They would have lost their last game of the year had it not been for Anthony Simons going for 28 or 29 points, whatever it was,
right
in the second half. So I don't know. It's the million-dollar question of what they do. They need to get a wing guy. Their wings right now are not very good in Aminu and Harkless. Whether trade or creating salary cap space in a different way. I don't know exactly what they're going to do, John, but they need to figure it out, because if they don't, you get complacent. And I think when you get complacent in this league and you don't get aggressive, that's when other teams pass you up. And I think that's the biggest fear in Portland, is this was a really fun season, a lot of enjoyment, a lot of entertainment, but maybe this is a one-off for them. And I think that's the fear, is how do you sustain and get back to where you can be talented enough to do this next year? They're going to lose Cantor, Hood. You'd imagine they're going to lose Curry, because why would a team not want to go get a good backup point guard like that? And then there's one more. Oh, Aminu is the free agent as well. So they could potentially lose four guys off this squad, three of which have been huge for them this last series. So we'll see. That's the tough part with Neil Olshey, and that's also kind of the tough part about being in Portland, is you're not a free agent destination. They don't have much cap space to deal with, so we'll see if he can make some trades, because they're going to need some help with playmakers to really match up against Golden State next year.
Yeah, and the Warriors figure to have, it at a minimum, Curry and Klay Thompson and Draymond Green and Iguodala and probably Kevon Looney back as well. And you know, the Rockets right. aren't going to stop trying to take the Warriors down. The Clippers look like a team that could get a free agent or two and be maybe mm-hmm. a level better than even they were. Oklahoma City's always in the mix, as we mentioned. And then there's teams that are going to be fighting. You know, Utah's around still. And, the Western Conference is deep. And you're right. I mean, Portland could be looking at a scenario where without Nurkic, it winds up being, maybe they're fighting to get in if they don't, replace some of those other guys, especially with a couple of teams on the outside that either have high lottery picks now or a team like Sacramento that thinks they're even on the come to maybe steal an eight spot next year.
You know, John, my biggest theory has been, and I said this, I think going into the season, the NBA season this year, if KD truly leaves the way people are projecting to go to New York, I look at it and I look at the league, and I want Portland to do well. I think if KD goes to New York, you're going to have the most parity the league has ever seen. Any year, any season, all time, with 30 teams, there's going to be no season that matches it, because you could really list off 7 to 8 to maybe 9. You could probably make arguments for of teams next year, assuming they can bring back their key pieces. This league is going to be open. And as much as I respect Golden State, you take KD off for a full season, that's going to change kind of the direction of their health, of everything else, of how many nights Steph's going to have to put 100% out there versus going, KD's feeling it, I can click this back down to 60% and we're going to get this win. Everything changes the league if KD leaves Golden State. I think it opens things up massively. It's just going to be about how does your team, insert whoever fan, how does your team improve or keep themselves in that conversation, or maybe pounce on a year where the Warriors finally don't win something.
Yeah, no doubt, and that's something we talk about a lot out here in the Bay Area, is just the fact that, look at the way this team kind of goes through the motions at times in the regular season, because they know when they have to lock in, they can. A lot of that mm-hmm. margin for error, that Kevin Durant fail-safe, it goes away, and you're right, it either becomes more taxing on Curry and Thompson and Draymond Green, or they just wind up dropping more games in the regular season, and maybe they find themselves in a position where they're like where the Rockets were, and they're a four seed that's got to play a couple of series on the road if they want to get back without home court advantage to another finals at that point. And every year takes a toll as well. I mean, this would be the fifth consecutive finals, maybe the fourth championship for that core group, not including Durant. So, yeah, no doubt next year should be very interesting, and I'm with you on the parity. It could be as open as it's maybe ever been in NBA history. I agree with that 100%. Brandon, this has been a lot of fun. Really appreciate the time, and not saying we won't get another chance to do this on Wednesday, but if we don't, I want to thank you and just tell you it's been a blast doing these podcasts here for the last week.
Dude, I appreciate you guys inviting me on. I've enjoyed talking Warrior Blazer basketball as well. And I hope to meet you tonight in person at Game 4. And here's to hoping that there's at least one more in the series.
Sounds good. For Brandon Sprague at 1080 The Fan in Portland, host of Dirt and Sprague, noon to 3 Pacific time on 1080 The Fan in Portland. I'm John Dickinson for 95.7 The Game in San Francisco, our Behind Enemy Lines podcast for Game 4 of the Western Conference Finals.
This has been a production of Radio.com Sports.